Good morning to all of you. Thank you so much for this wonderful invitation to speak here in Waco on this beautiful sunny morning in February. Thanks for that lovely introduction. I am the son of a Southern Baptist minister who married a Presbyterian minister's daughter. At some point in our pilgrimage, we became Episcopalian, and I guess settled on salvation by good taste alone. Dean Garland mentioned that I served for a while as a theologian in residence at the Episcopal Cathedral in Baltimore. I'm here to tell you that the work of a theologian in residence at an Episcopal Cathedral is about the easiest gig you'll ever have. So most of my time was spent enjoying my sunny office, reading and writing and going about the work of writing on the civil rights movement. And indeed, I am grateful to be here. My father is a Baylor Bear, and so I grew up hearing about wonderful and sometimes very moving stories of his years in Waco from 1950 to 1954. So it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. Several summers ago, while I was doing research on a book I was writing on the American Civil Rights Movement, my wife and I visited the small town of Rouville, Mississippi. Now, some of you may know Rouville. Most of you probably don't. And in any case, for those of you not familiar with the complex geography of the Mississippi Delta, Rouville is located in Sunflower County, which many people regard as the most southern place on earth, northwest part of Mississippi. My wife and I had come to pay homage to one of the church's great heroes of faith and justice. I speak of Miss Fannie Lou Hamer, whose remarkable photograph we see here to my left. So on a sweltering July morning, we drove northwest from Jackson, Mississippi, up old Highway 49 toward Yazoo City, through the dense alluvial textures of the summer, southern summer, in search of Miss Hamer's grave. In time, the hilly terrain gave way to the flat, rich fields of the Delta, and we entered the town of Belzona, the catfish capital of the world. Catfish is king, the welcome sign proudly announced on the city limits. And we stopped for a while at the International Catfish Museum, purchasing our baseball caps and our coffee mugs and having our photograph taken outside beside the 40-foot sculpture of the catfish erected in the front yard of the International Catfish Museum. Well, as we made our way untold Rouville, we passed billboards honoring many famous locals. Jim Henson, the founder of the Muppets, Mary Lou somebody who had once been a Miss America from one of these towns. Lamar Fontaine, Confederate poet enshrined in downtown Clarksdale. But the faded sign at the Rouville city limits greeted us only with the news that the high school football team had won the state title a few years back. And that's an important thing, of course, as we all know in Texas and Mississippi. But you would have to have known already in advance that one of the great prophetic voices of poor African Americans in the rural South lived her life and died here. I have spent much of my time over the past 10 years and more researching and writing and thinking theologically about the civil rights movement in the South. And I have come to see that so many of the best stories of that remarkable Pentecostal event that changed the nation and made us a better people are the smaller stories. Not just the big epics of the waters parting and the people marching over, but stories of everyday bravery, stories of long-forgotten failures, stories of quiet compassion, stories of unreflective acts of kindness. As you might imagine, I am especially partial to the story of Miss Fannie Lou Hamer. In 1962, at the age of 44, Miss Hamer left the cotton fields to, as she said, work for Jesus and justice and voter rights activism and civil rights organizing. She had listened to a sermon by James Bevel, one of Dr. King's young foot soldiers in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, a sermon on discerning the signs of the times, on hearing in the burgeoning struggle of the African-American freedom movement nothing less than the Spirit's movement towards greater freedom and human flourishing. It was a remarkable moment for a woman who had lived her entire life as a sharecropper on the Marlow plantation. Since the age of 7, she'd been out in the fields picking cotton with her 14 brothers and 5 sisters, working long, hard days, but still not making enough money to live on. From the first days of planting and the early weeks of April, to the chopping of weeds under the hot suns of June and July, to the picking of the completed harvest in the frosty mornings of October and November, Miss Hamer and the other field hands worked from the gray hour before sunrise to long after darkness had descended. Can't can't, as one local person said. Can't see in the morning because it's too dark. Can't see at night because it's too late. The work was monotonous and very often humiliating. Oh, Lord, you know just how I feel, Miss Hamer might drag out as she slowly walked a long row of cotton for what must have seemed the thousandth time that day. Oh, Lord, they said you'd answer prayer. Oh, Lord, we sure do need you now. Oh, Lord, you know just how I feel. Like her mother and father before her, and like her slave ancestors, Miss Hamer had looked on the long rows of cotton as the only future white Mississippi would afford black folks living in the Delta. But James Bevel's sermon, followed by a talk on the constitutional right to vote, spoke deeply to her deepest longings for fear, for justice, for dignity, and for greater human flourishing. During the electrifying rally that went late into the evening, her imagination was charged by new moral and spiritual energies, so that by the end, she felt called to step out, readied to trust God's promises to bless. When they asked for those to raise their hands who'd go down to the courthouse the next day, I raised mine, she said. Had it up as high as I could get it. I guess if I'd had any sense, I'd have been a little scared, but what was the point of being scared? The only thing they could do was kill me, and it seemed like they'd been trying to kill me a little bit at a time for as long as I could remember. Miss Hamer's life from that first step into the movement until she died in poverty in 1977 mirrored her conviction that God takes worldly form in human lives empowered by love. She gave voice to an exuberant Christian spirituality, evangelical in the most generous sense of the word, a robust, a worldly, disciplined love of Jesus of Nazareth, of the whole miraculous story of his life, death, and resurrection. And at the same time, and precisely because of that conviction, her love was a great big open love, open to anyone who cared for the weak and the poor and for the flourishing of human dignity. Miss Hamer liked to describe the civil rights movement, and indeed she liked to describe salvation itself as a big welcoming table, like the kind you might find in the back of her church in Sunflower County, the Williams Chapel Baptist Church. You've seen these tables, the big the big picnic tables in the back of the churches and in rural congregations around the South, where on special homecoming Sundays and dinners on the ground, everybody from the congregation brings their favorite dish. And on the table, an abundance of soulful food is spread. Cobbler, blackberry cobbler, and fried chicken, and greens, and fried okra, and collards, and cream corn, and cornbread, and iced tea that's already sweetened when it's hot rather than when it's cold and you can't quite get the sugar in there. You know, that wonderful feast of the South. And Miss Hamer said, at the welcoming table of the movement and at the welcoming table of God, everyone is invited. Even Ross Barnett, even James O. Eastland, the demagogic racist, you know, representatives from the state of Mississippi. Now, they would have to learn some manners at the welcoming table, but everyone was invited. Grace is abundant. Grace heaped upon grace was the story that she sought to embody. In June of 1963, Fannie Lou Hamer and seven other fellow travelers from the Delta were returning by a bus from a voter registration workshop in South Carolina, run by an extraordinary woman named Septima Clark, when they were stopped by police officers in the town of Winona, Mississippi, arrested and thrown in jail. Throughout a long, terrible night, Miss Hamer was beaten and tortured, subject to the vilest of insults and mockeries. Mockeries of her body, her convictions, her infertility, her blackness. The night proved to be a kind of Golgotha for Miss Hamer, an experience of intense physical pain and humiliation. But a remarkable thing happened the next morning that slowly transformed the killing despair of the jail and dispersed the power of death. When you're in a brick cell, she said, locked up and haven't done anything to anybody, but still you're locked up there, well, sometimes words just come to you and you start to sing. Song broke free. Paul and Silas was bound in jail, let my people go. Had no money for the go there bail, let my people go. Paul and Silas began to shout, let my people go. Jail doors open and they walked out, let my people go. Singing brings out the soul, she said. And in that grim Winona jail, as throughout her movement pilgrimage, singing brought out the soul of the African-American struggle for freedom. For Miss Hamer did not sing alone. Sitting in their cells down the hall, Uvester Simpson, Lawrence Guillot, June Johnson, N.L. Ponder joined her in song. Church broke out, as someone later said. Their singing did not remove their suffering. It did not remove the particularities of their anguish. But their singing embraced that suffering. It named that suffering. It folded that suffering into a glorious story of hope and deliverance. Despair turned into a steady resoluteness to keep on going. And the miracle happened. And at least for Miss Hamer, a peaceable composure, incomprehensible apart from a deep river of faith, transformed not only her diminished self-perception, the result of the torture, but the perception of the very men who had performed the torture. She said astonishingly, it wouldn't solve any problems for me to hate whites just because they hate me. Oh, there's so much hate in the world. Only God has kept us sane. Later, when she was escorted by the jailer himself to the trial, she had to stand trial a few days later, Ms. Hamer put the question to one of the very men who had helped carry out her beating. Do you people ever think or wonder how you'll feel when the time comes you've got to meet God face to face? His response was full of embarrassment and vigorous denial. Who are you talking about? He mumbled. Well, Ms. Hamer knew all too well what had happened. I hit him with the truth, and the truth hurts. The experience brought Fannie Lou Hamer face to face with her worst fears about racist violence, with her deepest fears about terrorism and torture. But empowered by freedom songs, by the truth, by righteous anger, and a fierce and generous love of Jesus, she became a pillar of strength to local people in the struggle, an abiding source of courage and hope and moral energy. Well, if you go in search of her grave, as my wife and I did that hot summer many years ago, you will find it in a large field behind an elementary school in Rouville. Although there is now, at last, a historical marker and some commemoration of her life and witness, she died in poverty on March 14, 1977, suffering in the last years of her life a devastating assault of cancer, of diabetes, of heart disease, along with severe mental strain and depression, her lack of disability income and inconsistent health care only intensified the stress of her later years. Ms. Hamer died, like so many of the church's prophets, without honor in her hometown. But on this morning, in the season of Lent, in this time in the church's history in the United States, when the gospel has been so widely misused and abused and so often reduced to a partisan talking point, let us not forget those who put love to the test. Let us not forget those who thought it more important to heal the world than to mold it in their own image. Let us not forget those whose patriotism was foremost for God's kingdom. Let us not forget those who lived in places that most of us have never seen or would rather ignore. Let us not forget those who make their lives parables of the welcoming table of God. And so let us tell each other and our children the story of Miss Fannie Lou Hamer and of all the other Jesus-loving misfits, malcontents, and agitators who rub against the grain. The stories of the peacemakers, the reconcilers, and of those who build hope among the excluded and the disheartened. The stories of those who abide simply and sometimes quietly with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. So let us this morning praise the peculiar people. And in so doing, let us together borrow the courage and accept the grace to be peculiar ourselves. Amen.